Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, Rally Gang. Spin the Rally Pod is ready to go in 2022 with a New Year's resolution from the team to bring you more regular rallying updates as we head into this brand new era of motorsport. I'm rally fan Lisa Rose Sullivan. Alongside me, thanks to the magic of the internet, is Dirtfish senior staff writer David Evans and former motorsport team boss George Donaldson. We will, I hope, be joined by the voice of rally Colin Clark, but he started the season with a bit of a lie-in and a few minutes ago was sounding exactly like a wasp. But, we don't want to hang around any longer than we have to. So I'm just going to start. And I'm going to start where, I mean, this is the Brit in me speaking here. We've got to talk about the weather. Monte Carlo, let's find out what the weather is going to be like. George, you're the man for the job.
Right. Well, I mean, if we look at just a couple of specific areas. So, you know, the northern part of the rally is Sisteron. It's as high north as we, far north as we go. It's just freezing overnight, you know, -3, -4 overnight. Now, that's enough to freeze everything properly at the side of the road. So we will get the usual, you know, rivers frozen, you know, streams frozen, melt at the side of the road, depending on how much snow there's been over the last few months. But it's getting up to 11, 12 degrees during the day, David. I mean, goodness gracious. Yeah, boo. Well, yes, boo, but... down at Gap, so you know near Monte Carlo, we're not even seeing it getting freezing at night. It's actually that warm.
What's the point?
What's the point, you say? I mean,
why don't they just call it San Remo and have done with it?
Kind of. I mean, it's definitely no. Go down to Sospel, which is the start or finish of Col de Turini, you know, at the bottom, but you're still high up there. It's, you know, next week
Colin on the line. Finally, Mr. Stay in bed's finally up and wiping the sleep from his eyes.
Sounding normal as well, Col.
Tail wagging. Almost.
Happens, Colin, don't worry.
Are you recording now, Col?
Yes, totally. Thank you, David, for reminding me.
Well, we've started without you because we needed to crack on to find what the weather's like, and it's been a little disappointing from the Monte Carlo side of things.
Can
I just apologise, George? Can I apologise first? Because David and we had a conversation yesterday, and it might actually be a video. And I said I'd never been late.
Jinx.
So with my lateness, I apologise. Sorry, Georgie, go ahead.
I remember the year I said I'd never missed a flight. I missed a flight. Yeah. It took me nearly 30 years to miss a flight, but I finally did miss a flight.
So you're recording now, Col?
Yeah, I'm recording. I'm on top of it now, guys. Don't worry about me.
That's fine. Well, we'll keep talking
Monte
about the weather,
George. Monte Carlo, sunny and dry, basically, which is good news from a spectator point of view, probably bad news from a photographer point of view.
I was talking to Elvin earlier in the week, and I put this to him. Are we looking at a very dry, consistent Monte? And he said, well... Who knows? As quite rightly, who knows? But he did say that he expected a bit of snow because he said the altitude is quite a lot higher in the more southerly Alpes-Maritimes. Mm. That's something to consider, isn't it, George?
You're getting up to 2,500 meters at the top of Turini, for instance. But
yeah,
it's showing as, I mean, you know, it shows us the next week is just absolutely no precipitation at all. the chance of any precipitation is down at 1, 2, maybe 3% at worst. It's fully sunny all day. So, you know, 8.5, 9 hours sunshine all day, getting up to 10 degrees during the day, early next week, a little bit cooler towards the end of next week. But there is no sign. I mean, that's a long range forecast. You know, we're six or seven days out. So
but
can
George,
change.
These long range forecasts are what the teams use to consider tyre selection. So yeah. what will be going on in the teams? What tyres are we going to see?
Well, it's still not warm, so you'll still be using the softs, but you'll not be using the snow options at all. Or maybe you have to. You know, maybe there's a situation where you have to. Or maybe use second-hand tyres.
Yeah. Is the bigger question, George, if it's getting that warm, will the soft tyres, obviously we have the super soft and the soft, we don't have a hard, will the soft be too soft?
The highest temperature we're going to see is 8 or 9 degrees. It's not like 15 or 16 degrees or anything like that. It's going to be absolutely fine. And then you're going to be in the shade. The road temperature itself is going to be down at probably, you know, 4 or 5 degrees at best. Yeah. Obviously, in the sunshine, the road temperature can get up to 15, 16 degrees in the direct sunshine. It is sunny all day, you know, here. But it's going to be super soft, basically.
We know there will be sections where snow and ice remains. You know, I'm thinking the top of Sisteron through the hairpins. What do you do up there?
That's on the shady side, so the north-facing side.
Yeah, exactly.
You can get it. So a soft slick works there. You know, it's. I mean, I've done the. I've been there many, many times over Sisteron, where you're working the equation. So you know you've got, you know, 2.5, 3.5 kilometers of ice and snow, totally dry up to that point, and on the north on the south side as you're going down towards Sisteron, down towards what's the name of
Thord.
Thor. It can be very warm and totally dry. So even in the days of all the very bizarre tyre choices where you had, you know, studded slicks and half snow, half slick tyre and things like that, really bizarre tyres, it was nearly always quicker on a soft slick if you could manage to get over it. Now, we've got four-wheel drive now. We've got very, very clever hybrid system, which, you know, you could actually probably engineer that finer. If you've got your mappings very cleverly done and anti-slip systems, so you've got GPS speed control potentially, I don't quite know what controls they've got, rather than just wheel speed sensors and things like that, you could do a lot. Although, bearing in mind, again, we have no centre diff, so it's just basically a track. We're back to tractors again, you know, four-wheel drive tractors, so that's not so smart. So, to my mind, it would have to be the point that you couldn't get up over slicks. You couldn't get up over Sisteron on slicks, because if you can get over it, what you'll win at the start and the finish will more than compensate for the time lost. Like, you'll maybe lose 35, 40 seconds going over the snow, maybe even 50 seconds, but you'll make up 70 seconds compared to a snow tire, effectively.
Right
on either side. So, I think it's just basically a dry Monty.
That weather coming.
I can go on.
I know.
I'm a drone. I apologise.
It's so sad that I actually really enjoy wondering what the weather's going to be and then moaning when it's not what it's supposed
what you
to
want.
Be.
Yeah.
Well, you're just generally an intolerable person. What can we say?
Does anybody else feel that it, and I think the weather is to blame for this, because Christmas kind of crept up on us and it felt like it was the middle of October. We've got a Monte Carlo that's going to be warmer than I want it to be. I mean, probably if we go back and look through the records, it often is warm. But here we are at the beginning of the season. I'm excited about it being the beginning of the season, but it does already feel like it's the middle of spring.
It does, and you know, the thing that is surprising is when you've got these new cars coming. You know, I remember talking to all of the engineers 6 months ago, and the absolute and seeing the absolute terror in their eyes that, oh my God, we've got to have these cars ready in 6 months, and then the same 3 months ago and the same 2 weeks ago, and now we're here. And Monty on Thursday evening is go. And you're right, Lisa, it does feel as though it has crept up on us, but who cares? Mm. It's here, and it is incredibly exciting.
It is exciting. It's exciting for all of the uncertainty, the controversy, if you like, that surrounded these new regulations. And it's exciting for all of the great unknown. What we discovered when we went to that incredible simulated rally with Hyundai a few months ago is that there is an awful lot of learning with this system that perhaps hasn't been properly thought through. Maybe that's a little bit strong. But maybe not properly considered.
Yet to reveal itself.
And we know it happens. It's happened throughout the history of rallying. You can test for many thousands of kilometres, but until you get into actual full competitive conditions, you're not absolutely 100% seeing all of the eventualities. And George, what year was it with Citroën? Remember that it was the year of McRae, Loeb and Sainz. And all the engines blew before the start of the rally, because supposedly you had developed these wonderful new engines, but they'd never run them on a prolonged road section. And it was the road section that did them. Things like that have happened in rallying. I think that was the year that Tommy won, wasn't it? Because was it McRae and Sainz? It happened after the start of the rally. Loeb, his engine blew before the rally, and I think they managed to change the engine. There is an awful lot.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember 2002, I think it was. George, remember?
No, Colin drove for Citroën and Carlos at the end of 03.
Was it? So what year was it then? And
was the Peugeots. It was Peugeots.
No, it wasn't. It was the Citroëns. It was the Citroëns. Sure, it was the Citroëns. George, help me out.
I thought it was the Peugeots as well, but I apologise. I don't apply myself to my memory on these things anymore.
I'm almost convinced it was the Citroëns. It was one of the years I was with BAT, with 555. But anyway, it was 20 years ago. It's early in the morning.
It would have been 2002 or 2003 then.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one of those two years.
Peugeot's in 02.
Tommy won in
Sleepy Call.
Yeah, I think it was that 2002. Tommy won in 2002.
Yes, 2002. Rally. Tommy won, and because Loeb was the only one of that was the Citroën Loeb was in that year, right?
No, Loeb was second. He won for a day and a half until they withdrew their protest for a penalty that they'd had.
Right.
For cheating.
How did that happen, George?
Well, just some team manager had his antenna out and detected someone was going on. Okay, it was me.
Hang on, what's that noise? Mr. G. Donaldson to the steward's room, please.
That's one of my greatest memories. One of my first memories of rallying, and one of my greatest memories. It's sitting in the Café de Paris with the good and the great of the Subaru World Rally Team, David Richards, Hugh Chambers, who was the boss at the time, George, the guy that went on to Formula One?
Nick Fry,
sitting at the Café de Paris, and it was Hugh Chambers holding his phone away from his ear, and we could hear George ranting. And Hugh then puts, George, we'll talk later about this one. Sounds very interesting. Phone away from the ear again as George gets... he hits the rev limiter of excitement. I've been there, I've seen it, I've got the pictures.
just, I think now we've talked quite a lot about that.
Yeah, let's leave the past behind. Let's move on.
Just a very quick one. What exactly was it, George, with Seb's car?
Their team coordinator kept asking for a change in the tyre allowances and the tyre ruling, which Monte Carlo kept denying. We all would have accepted we all could have asked for it at that point. But my antenna went up and I thought, why are they asking for that again? We've already been told no, it's not that big a deal. And I can't remember whether it was me. I think it was me that had asked in the meeting, to what was his name? The coordinator, co-drove for Carlos.
Denny Girardet.
No, it wasn't
Denny. Not Denny. It was
Michelle somebody. Anyhow, they had a, potentially had a tyre. The thought was that they had a tyre that could leak off pressure, you know, like not like the little valves. The consideration was, I'm not saying this is what they did, but the consideration was that they had a tyre that could blow off high pressure, just leak slowly. All four wheels could leak slowly. Very smart. If it was brilliant. But they wanted them, they didn't want to put the car into Parc Fermé. The rule was that you couldn't change your tyres at the end of this long leg when you came down over Quatre Chemins and so on, and down into to Nice. And those were the two stages that Sebastian Loeb absolutely had been in neck and neck with Tommy all the way, big fight. And then all of a sudden on two stages, he took like nearly a minute out of Tommy over two stages. And we were coming off the stage. Tommy's tyres were wrecked. And obviously, you know, the pressure goes up to about, you know, 3.5 bar. You know, it's a big advantage to be able to drop the pressure down. Anyway, Citroën came into the service, and had your service. You had to leave you'd service your car, main service, like 40 odd minutes, whatever it was. You had to put your car into Parc Fermé on the same tyres. And out of interest, I went along just to see that, you know, given what had happened, I went along to the Parc Fermé just to see that the cars were going into the Parc Fermé on the tyres they'd come off the previous stage on. And the Citroëns went in with brand new tyres and wheels, Parc Fermé wheels, basically, lovely and clean. Everyone else went in on dirty old tyres that had done a whole load of mileage.
Because if they'd left them on those tyres, potentially they would have gone flat.
So anyway, I'd already discussed this this request, per se, with the FIA scrutineer. So anyway, I saw him come wandering up, and he said, "Everything okay, George?" I said, "Well," I said, as per the discussion, you just have a look yourself. You'll see what's going on." And I could see him look at it, goes up, jumps over the fence or goes through the entrance to Parc Fermé, gets down around the car, straight on his phone, running away back along to Citroën. I said, as he sort of got up to look, I said, "I do think you need to go and find the wheels that came off the car. I think that's the issue, isn't it?"
Wow.
Anyway, they got given a 10-minute penalty by the stewards that evening for doing it, because it had been raised. And I went to bed about 2 o'clock in the morning. Everyone had gone away. I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning to go back down to walk from the hotel up to the notice board. And here's there's nothing on the notice board.
No, it wasn't, George.
It wasn't on the notice board, because I was there. It didn't go on the notice board until much later. Yeah,
no, but Loeb won, didn't he? And then it was after the event.
Yeah, I've got photographs, timestamp photographs of the notice board at 6 o'clock in the morning. There was still nothing on the notice board at six in the morning. Yeah. But I'd phoned out to the team and said I was just going to stay up there and watch. And about 7:30, 7:45 in the morning, just the cars were just coming out of Parc Fermé. I think I went across the road and found a coffee somewhere. Came back and about 7:45. Literally 15 minutes before the cars came out of Parc Fermé, the running order and the note came out that the 10-minute penalty was going to be applied suspensively, as the wording has said it. You think, you wow. complete tossers.
Right.
Anyway, there's nothing much you can do at that point. I talked to the stewards, and it was just literally that it was the last person in to strong arm the stewards. The chairman of the stewards was a really nice bloke, but he would go where the wind was blowing strongest. So you can imagine Guy Frecolan would be in there, and the wind would be blowing very strong, and he bent to that.
Loeb won the event, went over the podium. Citroën got its advert in L'Equipe the next day, and then soon after that,
they withdrew because they got it suspended. They got it applied suspensively, pending an appeal, because they put an appeal in.
And then they lost the appeal, didn't they?
Right. But there's no 21 minutes into this podcast.
Yep.
We need to move on to 2022. I've tried to move you on a couple of times now.
Sorry,
Colin. You're awake.
I am. No.
What can we expect from Monte Carlo 2022? 2022.
This is the great thing, and we've already touched on it, at least. It's the uncertainty surrounding it. It's very difficult to make predictions this year, isn't it? Okay, it's maybe just as well that the weather looks a little bit benign, because if we'd thrown in the uncertainties around potential snow and ice and black ice and all the rest, oh my goodness me, it would have been an impossible one to make any predictions for. I think there's enough uncertainty about the teams, drivers, form, all the rest, to make it really, really difficult to say what we can expect. I think we can expect plenty of stories. I think that's an absolute minimum. Plenty to talk about, plenty to discuss. But in terms of form, you know, who knows? I mean, you know, I would certainly not be looking beyond Ogier for the win. I mean, Ogier is the absolute master of Monte, and all right, he's not done so many kilometres of testing in the Toyota, but, you know, he was absolutely on top form when we were in Monza just a few weeks ago. There's no reason to think, yes, he's now officially a retired driver, but there's no reason to think that Ogier won't be the one to beat. But, you know, what I'm looking forward to very much is just seeing a renewed Tanak, because Tanak has been waiting for this rally for the best part of two seasons now. You know, he could not wait to see the back of that, you know, that previous World Rally car. He's talked a lot about his hope for the new World Rally car. Is he going to be given a car he's comfortable with? Now, we've seen Tanak in the past on tarmac really struggling with the old Hyundai. You know, we go back 3 years and he was almost unbeatable on tarmac in the Toyota. So, you know, all of these kind of things are going to be fascinating. Craig Breen in the M Sport car, you know, he had that big, big crash yesterday. Well, it looked big. It wasn't enormous. The damage was fixable, clearly, because it was back out again the next day testing with Greensmith. But, you know, there's a lot of expectation on Breen. Breen's in a situation he has never been in before in his life. He's got a full season, you know, a guaranteed full season ahead of him. There is so, so much to look forward to. But what we can expect, please, I really don't know. I really, really don't know. And that, for me, makes it all dead exciting.
David?
I think the one thing that perhaps we can expect, and without predicting any imminent doom or anything, I think we can expect some issues with these cars. You know, there is such a step forward with the technology. But yeah, there is a step forward with the technology. First time we've had hybrid in there. On one hand, it is much more complicated, but as George has already said, we haven't got a centre diff, we haven't got paddle shift, so we haven't got a hydraulic system to fail on the cars this year. Everything is much, much more mechanical. But the hybrid, the encompassing hybrid, will take its toll, I think. There have been a lot of failures, certainly early in the development of the cars last year. There were a lot of issues with that, and I think there will be here. The good thing is that if the hybrid does fail, it can be disconnected quite easily, quite simply, from the car. So a hybrid failure really shouldn't stop the car in its tracks.
But here's another thing that we you know, what's going to happen, you know, if your hybrid system fails and it's down to a, you know, through no fault of the team, the driver, if it's a failure of the component, you know, through a long loop of stages, you can be out the rally, effectively. Yeah, you'll get through the stages, but you'll be miles behind.
But don't forget, Carl, you won't be miles behind.
Won't you?
Because, you'll still have, let's not forget, you'll get you can have up to 10 seconds boost off the start. So you've got 530 horsepower instead of 380 horsepower off the start line, where you are massively traction limited anyway. You know, how much are you going to actually use that 520 horsepower off the line? But then in the stages, you're getting this regen, and then you're deploying the boost. It's not going to be minutes, I wouldn't have thought.
No, but over say you're losing 20 seconds a stage, David, and
That's a lot.
You think that's a lot?
I don't know.
You don't
think
20 seconds a stage is going to be the advantage of the... It's difficult. Listen, I'm making this up. I've got no idea, to be honest. I'm making it up.
There's an awful lot of that going on.
What is the hybrid? let's say a 20-kilometer stage. George, maybe you could... You might have a better handle on this. So a 20-kilometer stage, It's a typical stage. So there's a little bit straight, there's a little bit technical.
Yeah. So what's
it going to be worth? What is the hybrid going to be worth in that stage? Are we talking 5, 10, 20 seconds?
But we don't know how much they're going to be allowed to regen and deploy, though, Cole. Well, that's the other issue.
The reality is...
Work out, David.
The reality is
we
the
don't
region
know.
Won't
that's,
get
that's
very
legislated
much, guys.
By the FIA, though.
Before you go into the in-depths of that, can I ask a real idiot question here?
I've been doing it for years, Lise. Go ahead.
So what I'm trying to get my head around with the hybrid setup is the refueling side of things and the difference between the fact that you're not only carrying battery weight now, you're also carrying fuel weight at different times. But if you switch the hybrid off and run out of fuel and then the hybrid doesn't work, that kind of balancing act that you're going to have here, that you obviously want to run the car at its optimum weight. Whoa. So you're not going to put all the fuel in.
Yeah.
Are you?
No. There's not.
I mean, I know there's limits.
They will just stick as much fuel in as they ever did.
Right.
But isn't there extra excess weight then with all the...
Yeah, there is an extra 100
kilos. Yeah, they'll run as much fuel as they ever did, Lisa, but they only ever come back with what they need, come back with 6 or 7 litres to the service. Nobody comes back with more than that.
I think Lisa's point
there'll
is
be no
you would use less fuel if you're using
No, that's what was in my head.
That's what I thought the whole point of it was.
No.
They're only in EV mode in the service park.
Oh, okay. Right, brilliant. That clears that up completely.
Yep.
So, George, go back to my question then. What do you reckon? You know, and I know we're guessing, David, and I'm sorry, it's a bit of a silly question. I know we're kind of guessing because we don't
the
really
easy
know
way
yet.
To do it,
what's,
Colin.
What's it worth in a 20-kilometer stage? This you know, in terms of time.
So let's say you could maybe get as much as 6 or 7 kilometers maximum over the course of any stage. You would have with some level of assistance, whatever level of assistance is that you've got, and so 6 or 7 kilometers. I would. Just taking a stab in the dark. Now, I could be miles out, but I won't. Well, I won't be miles out, but I won't be super accurate either. But
is
you
that,
for
sorry,
that for that 6 or 7,
is it, George?
Yeah, with the additional boost, yeah, of whatever
it won't
level
be
it's going to
be. Like that.
Well, no, it'll be the equivalent of something like that. I mean, I'm going on the fact that if I drive my Volkswagen Golf, which has almost exactly the same capacity of system, I know that I can get about 6 or 7 miles of
yeah, but
hard
no,
driving.
George, we're talking seconds. We're talking literally
seconds
of a boost.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, that's what
nothing
they're allowed.
More.
Okay, so let's say that I'm completely wrong with that evaluation. I was imagining it would be delivering, you know, 50, 60 horsepower, because there's different mappings available. So I was thinking that you could tease it out over a number of miles, and that would be the most
That's
efficient
true.
Way
no,
of using it. So on that basis, figure it out. Yeah. You've maybe got somewhere between 80 and 100 horsepower more than another competitor for maybe 6 or 7 kilometers. Maybe it's just 4 or 5 kilometers. What's that worth?
Yeah.
That's going to be worth maybe a second to say 1 to 2 seconds per kilometer. Depending on the terrain and the all the other objectivities that come into the place. So you're maybe looking at 15 seconds potentially.
Stage.
15 seconds a
on
stage.
On a
20
yeah.
kilometer stage, something like that. Well maybe not, Colin. Maybe not, because yeah. if you can regenerate it on the road section, which you can do, you'll be able to do that very quickly because it will recharge quickly. On the road sections, because you're running your engine, you're driving the car along the road, plus you're recharging the system. Yeah. So as you're driving there, so you'll have that every stage. So it might be in a 10 kilometer stage. Yeah. It's still worth the same because you'll still get that 5, 6, 7, 8 kilometers. Of assist.
David,
so there's another factor.
David,
you started this, Colin.
David, it's,
you
it's,
got us into this, Colin. You asked the question.
We don't have a full deck of cards here. We don't have a full deck of cards, unfortunately. I've not managed to speak to anyone yet properly.
Shall we move on to talking about the colour of the cards?
Let's do orbital mechanics. That's going to be just as simple.
Oh,
jeez.
Oh, my goodness.
A cup of tea's just arrived for me, thank God. Thank God a cup of tea, because that's just about, you know,
I have to say, watching the Extreme E Championship and the deployment of the boost in that, I found, as a spectator, seriously underwhelming.
Yeah,
I'm hoping
I agree.
Of these are going to be a bit more.
Yeah, I would be with you there.
I think it will be slightly more straightforward than our concerns are. I think ultimately it'll just, you know, we've got cars with X amount of power and they might have a little bit less power for part of the stage. Use it in the right place and you're going to be fast. I think visually from our point of view in rally, it's not going to be terribly much different.
But also, George, things to consider is the fact that we've talked about, you know, the mechanical transmission, they're carrying an extra 100 kilos.
Yeah.
When they're on those super soft tyres, they are going to use the tyre.
Yes.
That's a factor, David. That's a factor. So who's the cleverest guy on tyres? Oh, yes, Sebastian Ogier. There you go.
100%.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, talking to all of them, they're in the same boat as us. None of them know. And there's real apprehension in the teams because we know a little bit about some of the failures with the hybrid and stuff. They know everything. And, you know, all of these teams, they all talk, the mechanics talk. And I've got a real sense across the service part that genuinely, you know, they're all kind of looking out for each other almost because they're all in the same boat, all with the same kit.
So that tells you where their concern is. So, I mean, from my point of view, brand new cars, brand new chassis. Everyone's got, you know, three brand new chassis, Ford, Toyota and Hyundai, all brand new. I'm confident. All those are well-resourced teams with brilliant people in them, very, very experienced. Everyone will have been working hard. I'd be confident the cars are going to be good and they will be reliable. The only question for me is the hybrid system.
The cars are good, George, but also don't forget that, you know, we've got this new FIA safety cell, which is common to all three of the cars. So they've got the tubular chassis and they've just bolted on these panels to make the cars look different. They're space frame chassis. There is a significant issue for the co-drivers.
Yeah, you know, that is a factor.
The co-drivers as comfortable as they can. But talking to Craig Breen, you know, Paul Nagel is one of the taller co-drivers. And Breen, he said, you know, he's got his sessions with the chiropractor booked in already. Mm-hmm. He is kind of folding himself into the car. He's very safe when he's in the car. But there's not a lot of comfort in there. And that's everything is changing. Everything is different.
Everything's changing,
moving on a
David,
little bit,
but you.
Everything's changing.
Everything's changing,
moving,
but you.
Moving
We're
on a little
miles
bit
apart,
to
but you
to
know
the fact
I love
that,
you.
That Elvin is Elvin is moving into this role now as a sort of team leader.
Yeah.
You know, with Ogier departing, is this Elvin's season? It's a difficult one because while he's there, he's got great experience. He's been around the championship a long time now. He's also got Calais coming up, and he's not just snapping at his heels now. Whoa. He's actually on a par in terms of speed on many events.
Yeah.
And I said to Elvin, you know, is this your almost your last year that you can go in and think, right, I've got the edge over Calais. I've got to use it. Is there an urgency? You know, there's always an urgency to be a champion. Is there an extra urgency this year? And Elvin said a lot of words, but yeah, he didn't really take the bait. He didn't really answer.
How do they get on?
Great. And that, you know, that's one of the things Elvin said, you know, we don't need a team leader in this team because the team is so together and they are genuinely together. We saw this when Ogier went to M Sport. It was incredible the way that him, Tanak and Elvin worked together in 17.
Yeah. But there was you know, there was a team leader there. There was a very definite
team leader. Of course there was.
Sometimes it doesn't work, though, David, when you don't have a defined team leader. But normally that situation arises because you've got two very strong drivers, two very strong personalities who the team management don't want to, if you like, you know, alienate by saying you're number one, you're number two. That's very different at Toyota this year, isn't it? As you say, because they are very much all, you know, on a par, and it's not that situation. You haven't got two egos saying, yeah, I want to be number one. So you get the conflict. And the conflict for me can sometimes be detrimental to the team unless you have a defined... I've never, ever agreed with not having a team leader. I think you always have to. But in this situation, it's different.
You could say Toyota's not had a de facto team leader for the last 2 years because... there was never any team orders.
No. But it's not explicit team orders, but it's you know.
No, but there was never any preferential treatment for Oshie. He didn't get the first test. He didn't get the new parts first.
Well,
as far as we know.
Well, okay. You know, it was never explicitly stated, but you know,
it's very different. Yeah. At Toyota compared to what it was at Volkswagen.
Oh, very, very different. Yeah, that's true. And I don't think it worked at Volkswagen. I really don't think, you can't argue against their success. Their success was just, it was all conquering, wasn't it? And it was dominant. And it was too much for the sport. It was too much for the sport.
And the story was spun that they were this great family and everybody was friends with everybody. Yeah. Nonsense.
No, you know,
absolute nonsense. Well, you know, there was a whole different undercurrent.
Totally. And it did foster a strange atmosphere between the drivers at times. And we know that Latvala was intimidated by Ogier. And I am Ogier's biggest fan. And, you know, for me, a world champion is a world champion. And none of us have been world champions. We don't have that mentality. You know, where it's win at all costs. And you see it in other sports. And, you know, it's very easy to knock people in that situation. But, you know, the reason that they're world champions and great world champions is because they're able to adopt that mentality. And the mentality Ogier had in the Volkswagen days was, you know, who are my opponents? Who do I have to beat? Now, normally it would be someone in another team. In that circumstance, it was quite clear. It was his own teammates. And he destroyed Latvala.
Yeah,
and he had no concerns about it whatsoever. That is my opposition.
Why should he? That was his job.
That is my job. He beat him. Not just, we're not talking about on the timesheets. He beat him mentally
in the head.
He beat him in the head. You know, and for me that was, you've got no number. If you've got a number one, Latvala knows his place. Mikkelsen knows his place. Ogier knows his place.
So here's the question then that we kind of agreed to disagree a little bit about Toyota. Who's the number one at Hyundai?
There isn't one, and this for me is a problem. This is what I'm saying. It absolutely plays. It's a problem.
I disagree that it's a problem, Colin. I disagree.
Okay, well, George, this is the great thing. There are two very different trains of thought on this. There's one that says, "Well,
come on, George."
Well,
tell
one
us.
is you know, you say, "Well, none of us have been world champions." I've worked in world championship teams, and
I've worked around
world champions.
You have
yeah. Well, you've already been unbelievably derogatory to me this morning already. So, you know, I'm not going to take offence, Colin, but I am offended. You know,
sorry. No. Mate.
And remember, what does a Scotsman do when he's offended? He retaliates first. So be careful; it'll come back. I guess you've retaliated.
Colin's only been awake 20 minutes.
Yeah, but retaliated first this morning. Okay, so I'm owed him a couple of sideswipes. No, I mean, the bottom line is any team that appoints a number one and then puts everything behind that is putting all their eggs in one basket. So no, I respect what Hyundai do, and I respect basically what Volkswagen did and Toyota are doing, and even and Ford as well. You know, you back the winning driver, you go out on that event, whichever driver is winning, you know, is leading and is going to win that event. You, if there's any resource to throw behind them, it goes behind that guy initially. And there's a pecking order that develops. Obviously, later in the year, if you're trying to get someone to win a championship, that changes slightly, and you might ask drivers to move around a little bit or resource it slightly differently. But
yeah,
I mean,
George, it's all strategy, isn't it? And
it's just tactics and strategy, Colin. Exactly,
and it applies
that
across business, it applies across sport, and it's and you can't argue about it. And I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah,
you know,
those teams are, you know, those drivers are paid to drive for the team, not paid to win for themselves. And many drivers over the years have lost that focus, and effectively been pulled up at one point or another. The benefit for a team to have the winning driver, as long as they're with them the following year, is massive, absolutely massive. So even if you don't win the manufacturer's champion, it's often argued that you're better off having the world champion than being the world champion manufacturer. But either way, you can still advertise off the back of it. You can still promote off the back of it. So
it's an interesting thought, though, George, what you said, that, you know, the drivers drive for the team. You know, it instantly made me think of three or four drivers that are driving that will start in Monte Carlo. And I'm thinking, yeah, there's at least two or three out there who are driving to win the world championship this year before anything else.
But that works for the team, and you need that level of determination. But actually, ultimately, they're being paid a lot of money as well. You know, everything that motivates them in reality 99% of it at least is because they want to win, and then, you know, that driven passion to that can be quite a destructive passion to anyone around them. But it's brilliant, and that's what you've got to leverage, and that's what you've got to manage and get the benefit from. But at the same time, ultimately, if there's any dispute inside a team, those drivers are paid. They're paid a lot of money, so they'll do what they're told. And that's a hard thing for a team manager to do, for a team boss to do.
So here's the thing, Josh. Here's a question for you. Let's talk Hyundai, because David talked about Hyundai, mentioned them.
Yeah.
You know, Hyundai have two of the strongest characters in the championship in their team. You know, in Tanak. And Tanak is a disgruntled Tanak. It's an unhappy Tanak. It's an underperformer.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is. It has been over the past. Not. Oh, David, the past 18 months. The past 18 months, there's no question.
Okay.
There is no question. Yeah. I'm not saying it's a.
Okay,
an
move
unhappy
on. But get to the point. Get to the point. Come on. Carlo.
But the point is, you know, when we talk team strategy, when we talk about managing drivers, you need a firm hand at the rudder. You know, how
there's no hand on the rudder right now.
There's none. This is my point. This is my point. We're 6 days. We're less 6 days away from Monte Carlo, and I've noticed Julian Monset's names appeared for the launch in Austria this weekend. As I can't remember the title that's been given to him.
Deputy
team principal. But there's no team principal. There is no one. These are strong characters. What we saw at Subaru in the mid noughties. Was a situation where no one was really in charge. The drivers were in charge, and it all went to whatever.
Yeah,
you know.
Look, from that point of view, in Monte Carlo, there's so many variables. Even though it's looking like a fairly dry Monte, we know there's going to be ice. We know there's going to be snow. You support all the drivers equally. You go out there and hopefully one of your guys has got the strategy right. The gravel notes are so important. The ice notes coming back are so, so important. The weather reports, balancing everything up, understanding what's about to come is so important. And a lot of that's done between the driver and their note crew. There's a huge factor there. The way they're briefed, the way they're controlled, making sure they're not giving spurious information to the driver that's actually not accurate. If you can lean back on the scientific weather forecasts and the temperatures.
Yeah, but George, my point is with two strong drivers, and David, what's your view on this? With two strong drivers and on the face of it, no strong character leading the team, how detrimental can that be, potentially? David?
I don't think it will be, because right. I think in some respects, in Monte Carlo, it is the teams against the event. You know, Monte Carlo is such a complicated, such a difficult event that, you know, there's this mentality of almost hunkering down and just getting through this event.
I totally agree with
definitely.
You, David. Totally agree.
Yeah.
But also, whatever Andrea Adamo would or wouldn't have said to Oit Ten Hag on Thursday afternoon or to Thierry Neuville going into the first stage, they would have taken it on board. And then done exactly what they wanted. You know, quite a long way into the season.
I'm not buying that, David.
So you're telling me I want to put you on super soft and I want to put you, Thierry, on soft.
No.
Just so we've got the nonsense.
No, I'm not buying the simplicity of your argument. I agree entirely, and it's unusual for you, David. And I'm granting you, you've had a few late nights and it was an early morning, so maybe your brain's not 100% working.
But this
the simplicity
requires
of that is
a
nonsense.
Of...
It's nonsense. You need someone at the top. Yes, yes, yes. When they go out,
no.
The drivers
of course
do.
You do.
What
are they going to say then? What's that person going to say to the drivers?
It's not those situations we're talking about. You know, those situations, we know exactly what's going to happen. It's the Portugal situation where someone had to make the call.
This is Monte Carlo rally we're talking about here, Colin.
Yeah, all right.
Come on.
Yeah,
there's
totally
potential.
Different,
Colin. No, but there's still potential for having to play tactics, for having someone with a strong hand having to make difficult decisions, you know. And in any rally, there is that possibility. And Monte Carlo is a unique rally. But my view is, okay, if everything goes well, no one will notice that there is no team boss. But there is the...
Can I make a comment now, please, Colin?
Can I just jump in and
no,
say...
No, David,
to make
David,
wait,
I really
wait,
want
wait,
to make
wait,
the point
calm down.
You've both got a point. You've both got a point. The important thing is I don't believe that Hyundai will be so rudderless that they'll allow their drivers to make foolish decisions. The team can have an opinion on, you know, one driver soft, one driver super soft. You would discuss it with the drivers, because if it's that open, the drivers will happily bracket. Yeah, they will happily bracket. But I don't think that Hyundai will be so rudderless that they'll allow the drivers to go off and both go away on a margin call that then just loses them a minute and a half to everyone else and loses the event on one stage. But it's not impossible, Colin. And that's, I think that's the point you're making, is is the team strong enough to make sure that they can resist a margin call when it's not sensible right across the whole team? You'd want to keep someone back.
And I'm not necessarily referring to drivers. I'm talking about situations that arise that require a firmer hand in terms of tactics, in terms of decisions.
Yeah, but Colt, you could also say that didn't Hyundai's ability to make those calls, those strategic calls, were they not marginalised when Alain Panasse left the team after Estonia?
Maybe.
So, you know, I'm sure there are, you know, there's Pablo, the new team manager there. There's Christian Lorio, you know, a man with vast experience that can make those calls. Yes, they do. They are missing that senior figure right at the top of the tree and the trouble is, you know, for a long time now, we've seen Adamo come out and make these really strong calls and make them vocally and leave nobody in any doubt about where his intentions lie. There won't be that.
Well, I think there will be, because if there's any gap there at all, Christian Lorio is a fantastic guy with fantastically
in the media, we won't be made so obviously aware of them. They will be made internally, but you know, this is my point, is that Andrea would come out and tell us exactly what was going on.
Can I have a final word on this?
I was going to say, you need final word and then final thoughts, because we are running out of time.
My final word on this is that, you know, we don't know. It's a new generation, it's new cars. But what we've seen in the past, you know, the cars are unbelievably evenly matched. You know, when you can get two different cars with different drivers doing a nearly 30-kilometre stage in identical times, we know that margins between success and failure are minimal. Absolutely minimal. They're micro percents at times. Not having a firm team boss might be 0.5%. It might be 0.25%.
I thought we'd left that one behind, Colin. You're going over all ground here, mate.
But that's my final point.
Sorry, George, David. But that for me is a potentially.
But it's
George, use your words. A catastrophic situation. I'm signing out. Sorry, boys.
But there's so many bigger unknowns than Hyundai's lack of a team principle.
Yeah.
You know, you're dead right, Colin. You know, the cars are evenly matched. They've got the same power, but the deployment and the integration of hybrid is massive for these things. So just to cover a little bit of business for Monte Carlo, obviously it is not only the opening round of the World Drivers' Championship, Manufacturers' Championship, also the first round of WRC2. Andreas Mikkelsen begins the defense of his championship. Other big names in WRC2, Marco Bilaccia, Nicola Gryazin, Johan Rossell, Eric Kamelybak, Chris Ingram, Sean Jansen, sorry, can't say that without saying the American accent. And of course,
it was American, brand, was it? Okay.
Yes, shut up, Lisa. Of course it was American. And all new WRC3, don't forget. Yeah. We have now got Rally 3 cars fighting for WRC3 championship this year. So very exciting. In terms of the route, all changed.
Hang on. One more drive you've forgotten to mention. Fast Freddy's back as well.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, God, exciting. Yes,
I was going to catch that, Lisa. Don't worry.
And co-driven by Peter Chune.
Yes, finished second on his last two Monte Carlo starts. Is he going to finish second this year? This is one thing. This is here's one for you. Somebody suggested to me that Monte Carlo this year will be won by a Rally 2 car. Oh. Maybe Freddy Loix can win. Anyway, just before I finish, so complete change to the route. We're away from Gap. We're out of Gap. And we are back into Monaco for the service part. Don't forget, no service on Friday lunchtime, no service on Saturday lunchtime. We have tyre zones only. Thursday night, completely changed. We're into Col di Torino on Thursday night instead of Sunday afternoon. Friday around Peugeot Tenier. Saturday up to Sistron. Sunday, I can't remember. Close to Monaco again, somewhere.
North of Nice, just north of Nice, not too far. No, really.
North of Nice,
well done,
south
David.
Of
that
Paris.
That was a very, very concise précis. I loved it.
Yeah.
Had a lot in it, David. I think I'll just give you my time. It's okay. I'm done.
All the stuff we should have been talking about. But the clock has beaten us because David's off to do another interview.
I'm going. My final.
You told us you ran away about three or four minutes ago, Colin, and you've done nothing but talk since.
Sorry, guys.
You don't have a final word. Another word from Colin.
A grumpy old man, and I'll do my best to get over that next time. Sorry from grumpy. Grumpy and stoked.
That's all right. Go back to bed.
It's allowed, Colin. It's okay.
At this end. Well done, chaps. We'll
thank you very much.
The most important thing is enjoy Monte Carlo Rally, everyone, and all our listeners. Please enjoy it. And guys, you get out there and give us the footage we need. I mean, I don't know. I think you've been slack the last couple of events, so I want to see better from you. I want to see more videos, and I want to see them regularly. I fall back into the realms of Dirtfish audience, and I'm wanting a better service from you. So lift the game, guys. Okay.
Right, will do.
Bye.
Definitely.
See you next week.
Bye.